Hey everyone, welcome back to The Growth Signal. My name is Alyssa Nolte.
And I'm Dana Vong.
And we are going to have an incredible conversation today. So Dana, let's get right into it. What is your hot take?
AI is the no-no. Human first. It needs to start and end with human.
Oh, this is a hot take. I cannot wait for this because every other person who's come on to talk about AI has talked about it as it is the end-all be-all of the future. Someday we are going to be half cyborg AI robots. So tell me more about this. Why do you feel this way? Because this is by far one of the spicier takes we've had on the show.
Oh, yeah. I'm done with it. I'll tell you what actually was the tipping point for me. You ready for this? It was a cell phone, right? U.S. Cellular particularly. I ported to another company just this weekend. When that happened, I was dealing with tons of fantastic customer experience. Not really. It was driven by automation, being literally in pull waiting lines and music and hold times and all of this fun. And then I was transferred to someone to help me. That did not help me. It was tough. And I realized, hey, this is a really crappy customer experience. We can't do this anymore to people, man. Like, and I got to thinking about, you know, hey, I've grown and scaled customer experience now for like, you know, 12 years and thought I knew where the bodies were buried. But then I was like, hell, I'm a customer again. And this really sucks. Then, to be honest, you know, thinking about it at a 30,000 foot view, you know, I was sitting and trying to get some help from a service perspective on my internet connection. And dealing with a robot, one of these work bots that are supposed to drive so much efficiency and level one support, right? We've all done it. I've made the profitability pool myself. I'm not an AI hater for those, so get on out of here with that. But, I mean, we got to get back to human and customer, man. Gotta.
It's so funny that you say that because I recently went through a very similar experience that I literally at one point was like pulling my hair out, writing angry blogs. I reached out to the CEO of the company and I was like, hey, just an FYI, I know a lot of really smart customer experience, customer success people who listen to this podcast. You might want to hire them because wow, this is terrible. Like, and that was after probably 15 days of going back and forth. I have one of those smart rings for those of you who can see the video and it like wouldn't work. Terrible.
Can I ping for just a second? Ping.
Yeah.
Do you love the smart ring?
I'm 50-50 on it.
Okay,
but I love data and I'm kind of a data nerd. So digging into the stats, I really enjoy. I have not loved the inconsistency of like how some of it works. So my battery was dying in like 14 hours, which is not really good when you're trying to track, you know, sleep and steps and all of those things. So I'm a data nerd, but I am not recommending it to people unless you are someone who really likes to dig into those things.
Right. Okay, cool. Now back to our regular schedule programming.
Well, it's just so funny too, because there are too many companies right now that I think are making trade-offs between what is good for the efficiency of the company, what is good for the bottom line, what makes their quarterly earnings reports look good or their investors happy. And they're doing it at the expense of their customer and their customer experience. And I think the problem is you need to make that active choice. Like if you're going to do something in the name of efficiency, you need to know the impact it's going to have on that customer experience. And you need to say, I am okay with our customers having a poorer experience in the name of efficiency and own it. Stand up out loud and wear it on your chest.
Yep. And then when churn starts to spike.
Yeah.
Right. You know what? You've seen it, right? You know, when churn starts to spike, let's not point the finger, right? When the board needs a scapegoat, oh, it's the customer success person. Let's get that leader out of there. They've been here for 5 months. They should have been able to turn this around by now. You know?
And I
hear it over and over, right? I know you do too.
Yeah. And it's not even just like the AI part of it. Sometimes it's just the processes and the things that we've put in place to make it impossible for people to successfully do their jobs. Because again, back to my ring example, that was my frustration the entire time. I reached out to support. I went through all of their automated stuff and finally I gave up and I was like, okay, it's been 10 days of dealing with this. I'm going to reach out to someone thinking like, oh, they'll solve it for me. 3 days later of back and forth chat messages and a total nightmare. I finally got them to give me a replacement ring. And I was like, great. Finally, it's been, you know, only 13 days. And they're like, oh, but we need your receipt. And I'm like, what do you mean you need my receipt? I've had my ring for like 7 months. Why would you need my receipt? It's still under warranty. And then they were like, well, we can't do anything. We don't have your receipt. And like, that's a process thing. That's a leadership thing. I was not mad at the customer facing person in that situation, because really their leadership said, well, you can't issue a receipt, or you can't issue a new ring unless they have a receipt. Like, that's process and not even necessarily automation.
Oh, this thing is interesting. You know, so that was profound, by the way. I couldn't agree more. And the thing that's interesting about that, since you went there, and I'm so glad you did, by the way, it's like, are we processing so much, right? At the face of, again, scaling. We all have to scale. We all have to figure out the balance. Okay, we get it. I mean, you founded companies yourself. You know how this goes, obviously. It's like, but at the same time, when is it honestly not working? Like, profitability is one thing. Yes, we need to show profitability. But I mean, there are organizations now that literally are saying, okay, we're going to invest in AI. And then we have somebody who's come into the organization that's like, hey, I'm going to make all of this magically work. We don't need people. We can reduce FTEs by 6. And like, I'm sure a lot of that, I love that you were conscious of being kind to that frontline person, because you and I both know there's probably 10 times less of her or he than what existed even 3 months ago.
Oh my God. Yeah.
I love AI, you know, and I, like yourself, you know, in the community, I mean, I'm so thankful to know people that are, you know, top of the globe at it. But the thing is, like, it's still not where investors have been sold that it is, you know, and it's like, AI may be able to have some plastic conversation, but AI still can't make people feel. And that amazing feeling, that's why people buy stuff. And that's why people stay, I think. I mean, that's where my head goes anyway. You know, it's not the process part, right?
We almost need to have like a real understanding of AI. It's not enough to be able to just like open ChatGPT and successfully engineer a good prompt, right? Because there is stuff that goes into it, and understanding the inner workings of that black box, or at least having the fundamentals to say, this is generally how the AI is functioning. This is how it thinks, how it processes, the types of things and the order of operations that it exists in, right? The same way that they made me, you know, learn PEMDAS. I don't know if that's still a thing in school anymore, but like the parentheses and whatever they are, I don't even remember, right? Multiplication, subtraction, like there's an order of operations. And if we don't have any literacy around how AI is doing things, then to us and to normal people, it probably just feels like a magic computer somewhere in the world that is spitting out things that we can't even imagine. We have to figure out, though, how do we understand the fundamentals of that black box? Because it can really change your perspective on what AI is capable of and when it's working well and when it's going to miss the mark because we understand those fundamentals.
Yeah, you bring in a point about like what does success look like when so many know, so, you know, it's, I think people are so busy right now in their day jobs or whatever they're doing from a gig perspective that it's like taking intentional time out to learn something new almost every single day. Yeah. About it is what it takes. And it's like, how many people are so caught up in reaction, the process, all this. And then it goes back to, like in my head, I don't want to give the impression that I'm like this person who just in my head thinks about like that 80s Apple commercial where they're running with the hammer that was based on George Orwell's.
I love that commercial.
It was such a great commercial. Great commercial. But all, you know, it's like, man, the bottom line is, you know, robotics, which I know is completely not AI topic, but I'm going there because I think both of these things, there's sort of this, oh, well, eventually, you know, it's going to be Terminator style. It's going to take us over, you know. And I will just say that I think in a lot of cases that investors in tech have drank the Kool-Aid a bit. And obviously, right, you know, from a foundership perspective, a lot of that honestly comes from, in my opinion, you know, you want to get the funding.
Yeah, it's part of founding a company is being really good at making something that is just smoke and mirrors and feel real, right? Not to like, you know, shit on any of the stuff that I've worked on before, because we try to make it as real as humanly possible. But there is a little bit of like, don't look at the, you know, the person over here, look at the person over here, because we want to get an outcome, which is to get funding or to get a customer or to close a deal, right? We're all guilty of it.
It's like Wizard of Oz, you know, not in Kansas anymore, you know, it's where it makes me think about what's going on behind the curtain, you know?
So I have a couple of questions for you that as you were talking, I wanted to make sure we make a note of.
Yeah.
Why do you think people are, besides being busy, what is the reason that we don't seem to want to learn about AI or really learn about the fundamentals? Is it too complex? Is it changing too quickly? Or are we simply just strapped for time and no matter how interested we are, we just can't do it? Or something else?
I think the people that need it most are too busy to give a lot of thought into it and a lot of effort, because of the fact that we started reducing workforce, in my opinion, too early relative to the maturation of the technology. And that's pretty visible in some of these companies now where we're seeing burnout. People are literally passing away on the job from stress. And, you know, I think it's that. I think it's also, quite frankly, my dad, he passed away years ago, but he used to say, you know, baby, people just don't like change that much, you know? And he was a country truck driver, but I'll tell you, whenever I go to lead a team or if I'm giving a consult, you know, having a consultation conversation, I always pivot with that first in my head, right? When I'm figuring out how to sell whatever I need to sell internally to whatever stakeholder, because like there's no me in team, and being able to like collaborate in that way where people can figure out, oh, well, you know, we're trying to do something collaboratively in a good way. And it's not scary, scary change is the way to do it. But people just, I mean, the reality of it is people hate change. My kid's a perfect example. She went back to school this week. And every single morning, it's like, I don't want to go. Super smart, loves school. Okay. But it's just the routine change of it. And, you know, in that way, I don't know that it's so much different than like the internet was, you know, I mean, we started standing up rings of fiber, before that it was copper and paper cable and all this, and said, oh yeah, let's push internet out. And people were afraid of that too. I mean, I remember in the 90s on my little dial up, computer that we had, my mother sat down the first time and she said, what do I do if I hit this button? And I had to explain to her back then, you go to the home button, mama. You can't get lost on the internet. You just go back to home. But, you know, I think people kind of feel that way about AI.
Yeah, that was actually going to, that's a perfect segue, because that was going to be my next question. Like, have we experienced this level of catastrophic is maybe not the word, but like really fast, aggressive change that flips the way we think about the world on our head? And you mentioned with the internet. So let's make some predictions, actually. We assume that we cannot put the AI toothpaste back in the tube, that we are down this road and it's going to be about like, how do we successfully manage it? What do you think is going to be the short-term impact on our relationships with our customers? And what is the long-term impact if we don't figure out a better way?
I think churn is going to continue to get worse. Not just because of, in my opinion, kind of a different level of understanding and respect of customer success as a practice inside of some of these organizations, but also because coupled with customers not having access to a live customer success person in a lot of these organizations anymore, quite frankly, the customer experience is about what was drummed up to either my cell phone experience or your ring experience. And so I think ultimately, if we're not telling a customer story in a way that shows value in time and money or in their language, then they're going to start telling a story themselves, or a competitor will. Neither of those is very desirable, right? And I think churn's just going to continue to get horridly worse. I mean, we can pivot it. I think there is an opportunity for customer success to make a renaissance, because we have to be able to have, you know, the one thing that we can do as customer success practitioners is we can have strategic conversations with our customers. And I think that that is something that is fundamentally underrated in organizations. And that's why, if we look at churn, I know you're a data nerd, so you'll appreciate this. If we look at churn now relative to 3 years ago or 5 years ago, I mean, it's not even a comparison. It's so much worse. And we're sitting around wondering why. I don't know. Ask your, you know, your call center that you just built, or ask the, you know, the AI work bot that's been integrated in, but not very well stood up, because your resource that was doing that project was, you know, short staffed and, you know, I'll just say had a full day to get things done and couldn't prioritize it to be implemented in the best possible way. So that's where my head goes. Those are a few things I think through on that.
With the churn going up, one of the concerning trends that I have seen over the last couple of years is, and the good people don't do this, so I'm painting with a broad brush, but if you're hearing this, you're saying that's not me, don't be offended. I feel like people, whether they realize it or not, seem to have this attitude of, I will do anything to understand my customers except actually talk to them.
Exactly.
And that is one of those things where, like, they blow my mind. I'm like, why do you think your customers are churning? Oh, and then they list off all of these things that come from this amorphous made-up scale. And I'm like, well, did you talk to them about it? Did you do like an exit interview? When was the last time you spoke with them? And they're like, well, we have a lot of accounts, so we only speak to them, you know, like part of the implementation, we do the onboarding. And then you're like 30 to 60 days whenever my CSP triggers it to follow up for the renewal. And I'm sitting here going, that is wild to me. Why would you not talk to your customers? Your job has customer in the title.
Exactly. And then we wonder why, I mean, to your point, like, customer success isn't, you know, and that's how I think a lot of those situations, to your point, I know you've seen it over and over. But unfortunately, that's how customer success got a bad rep sometimes, because we allow stuff like that to be customer. That's our customer engagement program. That's how we're going to interact with people. That's how we're going to go save account. Get out of here. Ain't nobody going to save an account like that.
No, there's an entire industry built around save motions, and none of those industries involve, like, how do we better look at usage analytics to understand who's going to leave and who's going to stay. None of that's the same.
Here's a hot take for the hot take. It's like, so, you know, here's the playbook for saving accounts. No, there's no playbook for saving accounts. You have to talk to people. That's what nobody wants to hear, I think. And I know you've seen this. Like, it's like, yeah. And I'm not saying, again, there are some fundamentally amazing AI-driven tools that do help drive efficiency. You know, Scribe, Flowla, a couple of my faves, right? They are more personalized. It's great. But we have to have people orchestrating all of this, or we're going to get in pretty rough ground pretty quick.
It's okay. So my brain is spinning on that, because there's like a question just inkling behind my temple. So hopefully this comes out right. But you said that we have all of these really well done AIs designed to drive efficiency, right? Mm-hmm. So one guest on my podcast a couple of months ago said, you know, companies can really be one of three things. You can either be product driven, ops/efficiency driven, or you can be customer driven. So where are the AIs that are designed to make me more customer driven? Because if there's an AI designed to make me more efficient and make me more money and all of that, that's great. If there's an AI to help me make my product better, that's great. But it feels like we're so focused on the efficiency version of AI. Why are we not focused on the customer relationship version of AI?
Wow. Yeah, that's mind blowing. I love that. And while I've caught many of these episodes, because usually they blow my mind, I'm going to go back and check that one out, because, I mean, clearly that's one that is worth the watch times five. I mean, it's a whole thing. I mean, it's like, let's do, you know, and I know you've heard this too, probably 8,000 times. It's like, oh, well, you know, we can get low level hanging tasks off your plate. I bet I get 10 LinkedIn messages a day from someone telling me that, right? And I'm sure you do too.
Yeah.
That's great. It's fantastic. But to your point, and it's a very astute one, it's like, are you going to help me keep my customers? If you can't do that, you know, then, I mean, it all, because that's the thing, I think, that's the cool, crazy, weird thing about all this. Like, we all work for the customer. And I think there's this misconception that, you know, we work for the board. You know, let's work for whoever. And you know, transparently, I've worked for leaders like that, right? Who just make really bad decisions. They're not great leaders. And then wonder why what they're doing doesn't work or they don't get buy-in. I don't know. Yeah. Doesn't sound like you're motivating people in a way that keeps customers. To me, that's probably why.
And part of that, too, is incentivizing the wrong things, right? Like, I report to a board. And so, like, my incentive is top line. Like, they judge whether I'm good at my job is because I'm bringing in top line, but they're not really caring or paying attention to bottom line or, like, customer retention, because it's not what they're incentivizing for me. And so I think we have to do a fundamental conversation as an industry of anyone who works in tech to say, okay, we need to incentivize the right things. And top line might be the right thing for your business, but just know that churn is the yin to that yang. So, like, what is the incentives that you're going to give your team, whether you are a board to your CEO, your CEO to your next line of leadership, or your CEO to the entire company? What are you rewarding, because that's what you're prioritizing?
100%. 100%. Just like we wonder why there's misalignment in sales and CS teams. I can't imagine. It goes back to incentivizing and how, you know, misalignments on comp and all that fun stuff. I love what you just said. And I think, honestly, we need more of what you just said from a conversation standpoint in the community and less of, hey, let's get CS executives to be able to speak budgetary or revenue driven language to the top line, because that's what's going to get us commanded respect, you know, from a holistic standpoint, from peers, these types of things. But reality check is, like, if churn it will kill any business faster than anything else from a monetary stance, to your point. And so, like, talking and making that acumen inside of leadership stronger is a huge opportunity that I think we all could really get behind.
Yeah. And I think if you're a talented customer success professional and you're at a business that is consciously or unconsciously only focused on top line and doesn't really care about churn, maybe take your talents elsewhere. And that's totally okay. Like, if all the talented people go to the companies that are prioritizing the customer, all of those companies are going to shoot up because they have the right mindset and the right people. Like, let's use our feet. Go somewhere else if they don't value what you're doing. Don't try to change the value that you bring to the table or change the way you talk about it. At the end of the day, you're there to retain customers. And if you're doing that, that's great. But if they're not promoting it, they're not rewarding it, then they don't care. It's cool to move on too.
Let's use our feet. Hashtag needs to be on a t-shirt. I love that.
I love it. That'll be whenever we get official pod merch, that'll be one of our pod merch items.
Love it.
So, Dana, considering all of the incredible people that you know or that you aspire to know, who is doing this better than anyone else? Who is changing the way we think about our relationships with customers?
You know, unfortunately, the person that did it best, I don't know that, obviously, now it's impossible to have a conversation with us, but I go back to the very first time I got on an airplane. I was actually 31 years old, flying to Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, to visit my sister for Carnival, of all things. It was a 14-hour flight. I was scared. I was getting on a puddle jumper out of Greenville, North Carolina. And the only way I was able to get on that plane was I had a copy of Anthony Bourdain's Kitchen Confidential stuffed in my backpack. I always keep that in my backpack now. I've traveled all over the world, and I've had the privilege to serve teams, and those teams have been global. And so when I fly, that book comes with me. And it's because when I was 18 and didn't have a pot to urinate in, so to speak, right, and didn't know where my next cheeseburger was coming from, it was one of those things where I would sit down as a young kid, I don't smoke now, but back then I did. I would light a cigarette and drink a glass of wine, and I would travel with Anthony on the TV. And I knew that that was really important. Why is that relative to all of this? I mean, I think his quote probably says it best, and I've got it pulled up here because I wanted to share it with your viewership. But if I'm an advocate for anything, it's to move. See, it goes back to what you just said about the feet, walking feet, right? As far as you can, as much as you can, across the ocean or simply across the river, the extent to which you can walk in someone else's shoes or at least eat their food is a plus for everybody. Open up your mind, get up off the couch, and move. The bottom line is that's what we have to do for our customers.
Yes, I'm obsessed with that. That is such a good example. And we didn't plan the feet thing. Like, that was not pre-planned in advance. That was just serendipity for us.
It just happened, you know. It just happened. It's because it's the Friday, and things sometimes just happen on Fridays.
I love it. And if someone, Dana, is really connecting with you, they want to learn more, they want to have a conversation, where can they find you online?
Yeah, you can catch me on LinkedIn, right? Also at www.rebelsofsass or danavaughn.com. Always happy to have a conversation. And if you're in the New England area in October or November, catch me at CS Collective and or Customer XCon. I'll be speaking at both coming up in the fall. So super stoked to connect with any of you.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for joining me on the Growth Signal. This was an incredible conversation.
Yeah, I had a blast. Thanks for having me.